Tobin Miller, give me a name.
J. Robert Oppenheimer.
Welcome to Give Me a Name, where a guest presents me, Ben Kirschenbaum, with a dead historical figure they find interesting, and we discuss. This podcast is coming out the day before the Oppenheimer movie, so I just wanted to say to Christopher Nolan, you're welcome for the free publicity.
Here we go, J. Robert Oppenheimer. How's it going?
Everything's good. I did a lot of research on J. Robert Oppenheimer.
For those of you who are just listening, Tobin did a double check of the name.
Just to make sure.
Notes.
Well, it's Robert Oppenheimer, but the J throws, no one ever refers to Robert Oppenheimer.
He said that it stood for nothing, but apparently it's his dad, Julius, but Jews don't do that. Jews don't name after living people. So,
oh, they don't have juniors.
No juniors. We name them after dead people.
So like great-grandfathers.
Yeah. People that I never met kind of thing.
Well, they weren't, from what I know, they weren't practicing Jews.
No,
right?
They were, and Oppenheimer is always a bit of a kind of...
Every time I get something right, I'm just going to be like...
just give a fist bump.
Fist pumping the,
every time
the
you're just Tiger Woods on the 18th green. you got it. So they were part of a movement. So he went to what's called the Ethical Culture School, and their big thing, founded by this guy Felix Adler, was that they were like Jews, but... they were sort of assimilating into culture and more just like, we're ethical people. We are part of like civil rights and like all this stuff, but less like devout religious rituals type thing.
Right.
And Oppenheimer, I think it's fair to say, at least when he's younger, is a bit of a kind of not very proud of being Jewish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're like Gen Z. They're like Gen Z with religion, right? Where they like, they are... but they aren't. Like, they don't think about
it.
It's
like on
much.
Hinge. They're spiritual, but not religious.
Right. That stuff. I'm not on Hinge, so. But anyways.
I thought you were on Hinge.
I just got a notification I got a new match. No, but yeah, his dad was a textile importer.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Very rich. Mama painter.
Dad from Germany and totally self-made man. So he went to this ethical culture school, which is like a fancy school. It's now Fieldston, which is like one of the fanciest private schools in New York.
Really?
Yeah.
So they pivoted to a private school. Is it still Jewish?
A lot of Jews. I know that it's diverse now.
Right.
But, so I went to Horace Mann. We played them in sports. We were like, that was kind of a rival, or one of the rivals. And one of my good friends went to Fieldston.
Really?
Yeah.
Were they good at sports? No.
I mean, like tennis.
Yeah.
It was Jews.
Squash.
Yeah.
They were good at squash.
They were really good at squash.
Handball.
Great skiing team. They were
mainly the only team that could afford to truck everyone up to a mountain.
So Oppenheimer, born in 1904, April 22nd, New York City, Upper West Side guy, Riverside Drive, and... he's kind of a prodigy. He's like really into rocks as a kid. That's his big thing. And he like gives a lecture to adults on rocks when he's like 8 years old or something like that. Shy kid. Has bouts of depression his whole life. That's a big thing. And then goes to Harvard.
From what I read, he graduated third and fourth grade in like 1 year.
Yeah. No, so he's
He's graduating early. I think he graduated high school early too.
Yeah, so he's right. He gets his PhD. I think he's like 23 or so. Yeah, no, he's
he graduated Harvard in 3 years, right?
Yeah, graduated Harvard in 3 years.
Yeah.
Then he goes to Europe because Europe is like really the center of science at the time.
Yeah.
Harvard is great, I guess, but he goes to Cavendish to study under like Rutherford. Well, he wants to study under this guy Rutherford, but he ends up studying under this guy Thompson, who discovered the electron. And then he goes to Göttingen in Germany, and that's where he meets like all these famous big young physicists of the time.
Yeah.
Including Heisenberg, who is kind of his rival, who is going to try to build the German bomb during World War II. So they knew each other.
Did I miss all that? I didn't know that he knew the guy that was working for Germans.
Who is kind of like his, Yankees Red Sox.
Were they buddies when they met or no?
They were. I think they were like friendly.
Yeah.
They didn't, you know.
They said hi at the coffee station.
Yeah. They shook hands after the game. Yeah, I'll see you.
Well, do you know in 10 years we'll be mortal enemies.
And he gets his PhD. He's really into, I mean, he studies a bunch of things. The other thing to know about him is that he kind of is like smart in everything.
Right.
His theoretical physics ends up being his thing, but he's into like poetry and yeah, the rocks thing.
He reads a bunch of Bhagavad Gita. He's into like philosophy too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And Hinduism. And then, yeah, right. That's the famous quote.
Right.
After he sees the Trinity test, which is the first time an A-bomb is ever dropped in New Mexico. I have become death, destroyer of worlds. Is that, am I quoting it right?
Yeah, I think so. And by the way, for those of you at home, the Trinity test was done on July 16th, 1945.
For those of you who don't know, Tobin didn't even look at his paper for that.
No, of course not. That was just the sound effect that Ben put in post.
I get intimidated by my guests. I don't. They can't beat me.
They can't be remembering all these names.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff, I guess, about him between studying and World War II. He ends up at, he's at Caltech for a little bit, but then ends up at Berkeley. He is like a shitty teacher at first, but ends up being a good teacher. Now let's get to the women.
Yes. That's a full page of my notes.
So he gets into a relationship with this woman, Jean Tatlock, who is a communist.
Right.
And
but before that, at Cal, do you know this guy, Linus Pauling?
Oh, that's a good, yeah, tell that story.
Before this, he's at Caltech, and he's with this guy, Linus Pauling, and they're working on chemical bonds. Like, that's the type of thing that they're working on. And he goes to this guy, Linus Pauling's house, when he's not there, and invites his wife. He sees his wife. He invites her to, like, Mexico to hang out, right?
Yeah. No, he just, like, makes a move on her just unabashedly. He's not married at the time. Well, Pauling is, but right. Oppenheimer isn't.
And then she apparently she says no, right? And then tells, that's what they say.
That's what they say on Wikipedia.
Who knows what happened behind closed
Wikipedia
doors.
Wikipedia famously on Oppenheimer's side.
There's no citing in that little, they're like unconfirmed sources. But
the citing is just Oppenheimer's diary.
But she goes to Pauling and says, hey, this guy made a move on me. And then they end up stop working together.
Yeah, and Pauling is like, I think he has 2 Nobel Prizes. He wins a Nobel Peace Prize. He's like a huge, huge deal.
Yeah.
So another like Pauling versus Oppenheimer, like 2 of the most famous American scientists ever.
Yeah.
Just.
And later he apparently invited him to work on the Manhattan Project.
And Pauling said no.
Yes.
But that was not because he tried to fuck his wife.
Oh, really?
It was.
I thought that would be the main.
I guess maybe he made an excuse. He
Did
said
you forget about trying to fuck my wife?
He said it's because he was a pacifist.
Right.
But
yeah,
maybe it's because
that's what Wikipedia said too. But, you know, there's some things you can't write down.
You can't. Wikipedia can't curse.
Wikipedia can't just be a slanderous news article.
So the reason why Jean Tatlock plays into it is because Oppenheimer in apparently in the 20s and 30s, he doesn't really give a shit about politics at all.
Right.
He doesn't. He said he never voted until the 30s.
Right.
Apparently, because he's well off and doesn't have to worry about money, he didn't even like know about the Great Depression until like 6 months in.
Yeah, he didn't know about the Wall Street crash.
Yeah, he's like, oh yeah, I didn't. He's like,
was that the Great Depression?
Yeah, it was the Great Depression. He's like, it sucks.
I read Wikipedia and it said he didn't know about the Wall Street crash of 1929, and I didn't link it to the Great Depression.
And you're like, who the fuck knows?
Yeah, like
about
you bring up the Great Depression, I'm like, I'm an idiot right now.
you're thinking like, who knows about some random Wall Street crash?
No one knows about these Wall Street crashes. He was walking and grabbing a coffee with a buddy, and that's when he figured out. 6 months later.
6 months later. So Tatlock is one of the reasons why he starts to get into politics, and the fact that he gets involved in politics will come to bite him in the ass later. So whether or not Oppenheimer ever joined the Communist Party at this point is kind of the big question, and he probably didn't.
Right.
Officially join.
Yeah.
But he's having a relationship with Tatlock. His brother, Frank Oppenheimer, who's also a physicist,
right,
is a communist. His wife is a communist. So he knows all
these
communists.
Like, all the physicists he's hanging out with
all
are
the physicists,
right?
His
like,
students,
everyone's communist.
Everyone's a communist. He's part of a lot of organizations, like, you know, fighting for unions that are like kind of communist fronts. That a lot of people. And then the other big thing is that the Spanish Civil War is going on
right, yeah.
between the liberals and the fascists, Franco, and he gets in. He's like super rah-rah for the liberals in that. So that's another thing where he's like getting involved in politics.
Right. Do you think that back then everyone was just like, I was thinking about, I would love to see a statistic.
Yeah.
How many people were like communists back then? You think it was like 2%, or do you think it's kind of like 20%? That was just like a super way far wing
of
a side, you know?
Well, I think the thing is that Stalin doesn't really show how psychotic he is until the I mean, I guess he's showing it the whole time, but the most egregious thing, it's not
Stalin
like
Stalin supporter over here.
Not a Stalin supporter.
We lost
supporter.
All of our followers right now. This guy is supporting Stalin right now.
What I meant to say was Stalin was great for a while.
Right, yes, yes. He said some correct things.
So Stalin, during like all these purges in the late 30s, and then eventually, you know, the Soviets signed the pact with the Nazis, which causes a lot of communists in America to be like, wait, what the fuck is, what was this?
Right.
It's, for a lot of Americans, it's kind of this like tempting philosophy, like, oh, communism, that's nice. My great uncle was
here.
Bet you didn't look this up.
Close the door. Camera shuts off.
My great uncle was a famous scientist. He's on the short list for the Nobel Prize.
Really?
He got
for what?
For he was a chemist or a biochemist.
You know more about Oppenheimer than your grandfather that was almost Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, great uncle.
Yeah, if it was great uncle. All right.
But he's kind of like the pride and joy of the family. Like this is like, you know, the big you know, big celebrity in the family. But apparently he got a little bit of heat too in the 50s during the Red Scare when everyone was cracking down on communists, that I don't think he was ever part of the party, but he like attended some meetings and he said that basically that was just like a social thing.
Yeah.
Like that's it was like a mixer.
Yes.
That's where you went to like meet people.
Yeah. I like the phrase, he never joined, but he attended some meetings. Like he was thinking about it.
He did.
He's like, let's see what this is. Let's see if they can get me.
Well, Oppenheimer has a word for it. He refers to them as fellow travelers, which basically means people that did exactly that. They were like, they were dabbling, they knew everyone, but they were never, you know, card holding communists.
Right. And if you're around, I feel like college schools, that's when people are experimenting, they're going to different things, radical ideas, you know what I mean? So I feel like in college, university, there might be a lot of that stuff going on, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not that crazy.
That was the thing to experiment with.
Right.
Instead of like, you know, lesbianism.
Right. Let's go to some communist organizations.
So, all right, let's jump to World War II. Oppenheimer is becoming kind of a big shot at Berkeley. I should also say, like, he is a great scientist. Like, he never wins a Nobel Prize, but he does some work.
He was up for it three times.
Yeah, he was up for it three times.
I didn't do a page.
He collaborates with a lot of famous people. Max Born, who is his thesis advisor in Germany. Max Born, fun fact, grandfather of Olivia Newton-John.
Really?
Yeah.
Olivia Newton-John's Grease?
Grease.
Oh, man. I just watched that again. Great movie.
What's your favorite song from it?
The intro is pretty good. And then I love make it off the rails here. The last scene where Olivia Newton-John does the makeover.
Sure.
And she's in all leather.
Yeah.
That's like the hottest thing I've ever seen in my life. When I was a kid, I was like, this is nuts. She may have been my first crush now that I think about it.
The hair is, no, not Rizzo. That was my first crush.
Until the last scene.
Rizzo, famously the 75-year-old high schooler. In the
Sandy, man. There was a guy that looked like 75, too. He like had a beard. And Anyway,
Max Born is Olivia Newton-John's grandfather. Max Born was the famous physicist who Oppenheimer worked with. And Oppenheimer does some like work on, I think, like helps discover the positron, which is like the positive version, positively charged version of an electron. Mm-hmm. And he also does some work on black holes, like way before people gave a shit about them or knew about them.
Yeah, he predicted the massive stars would be unstable and there'd be a gravitational collapse with Tolman. If you guys want to search that.
And you look up that in your little book.
But apparently, I mean, Wikipedia says this. Apparently, his paper on black holes is the most cited of his work. Because that's still relevant, you know what I mean?
The other thing is that he dies in 67, mm-hmm. And you can only win a Nobel Prize if you're alive. So maybe it's one of those things where maybe he would have won it if he was like so ahead of his time that he didn't win a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, Wikipedia said that like he died before, and I was like, I didn't know that
you can't win. Yeah, no, there's no such thing as a posthumous Nobel Prize.
It's kind of nuts.
It's nuts, but at the
I
same
might
time,
write a letter to the Nobel Prize. A lot of people getting overseen.
But it's also like, because you don't want to die and be like, I wonder.
Right.
I wonder if.
Think about all the people that die and all their work comes about to be popular when they're dead.
But the thing is, like, if you're dead, you don't appreciate it. Plus, it's a money. Yeah. You get money. So
do you?
Who are they going to get
money? Not much, right? It can't be. It's like an award.
I don't know.
50K?
It's Swedish, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Some 10
you
crones
get a million
or whatever it
is. A million crones.
So he's a big deal scientist. Having said that, when FDR decides to create the Manhattan Project, mm-hmm. It's kind of rumbling for a little while. Einstein famously writes a letter to FDR saying, there's this thing that German scientists have recently discovered called nuclear fission, and it's possible that because of this discovery, you could theoretically create an atomic bomb.
Uh-huh.
And the way it works, as you know, generally speaking, is that you send a neutron at another neutron, they split up, it creates energy, and the free neutron causes a chain reaction, mm-hmm. just keeps going and going and going, and huge explosion happens.
Explodes, yeah.
Einstein writes this letter. Basically, there are a lot of other scientists, especially Jewish scientists. So this is kind of what's interesting, is that tons of Jewish emigres help build this bomb.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost like...
Not
if,
in Germany.
No.
In the United States.
Right, are part of the Manhattan Project, or part of the birth of the ideas. It's almost like if Hitler didn't hate Jews, which is a big if...
Yeah.
Maybe he got the maybe he'd get
the maybe
bomb.
The biggest if.
Maybe the biggest if.
Would you choose someone else to hate? It's like these blonde guys, I don't like them.
He just did a full reverse.
Yeah. Is that what I don't know if you know this, but when there's a massive war, does everyone kind of silo and help whatever country they're a part of? Because you're like, there was a German scientist that was helping Germany. Does everyone kind of recruit? Like, let's say Oppenheimer was in Europe.
Right.
During the war.
Well, he's a Jew. I mean, the problem is that he's a Jew.
Right.
So, I mean, I think there are certain people. One of there was a scientist who Hitler, I think, was convinced, I forgot his name, was going to cure cancer. So he kept him around because Hitler was a big hypochondriac too. But for the most part, he stuck to his guns when it came to
knowledge. You kind of stay with whatever allegiance you...
Yeah, I mean,
have.
I think a lot of Germans like Heisenberg probably were, Christian or non-Jewish Germans were faced with the dilemma, do they like this guy's politics, whatever.
Right.
So the whole idea of building the bomb, starting with Einstein's letter, mm-hmm. is the Germans are going to build it first. Mm-hmm. That's the fear. Germany, ultimately, what we know now, wasn't really that close. Because the problem isn't the theory behind it. They knew the theories, the general idea of how it would work. But you need uranium or plutonium. It's very hard to get the materials on such a huge level. Uh-huh. It required for America a project as big as the Manhattan Project, which was like employed thousands of people and cost millions and millions of dollars.
Apparently, it started as like in Los Alamos, who started with a few hundred people. And by the end of it was 6,000 people.
I also listened to a thing. Apparently, like 90 to 95% of the people were not told what they were doing.
Oh, really? There's like just some like blacksmith just like, all right, I guess I'm here.
I mean, I guess I would ask questions. But like they weren't told the degree to which, that they were building an atomic bomb.
Yeah, I guess if you were like a store, like you were like the CVS person back then,
right?
You wouldn't want to be there if you realized that the whole place could blow up any minute.
Yeah,
if they're like testing bombs, I wouldn't want to be around that, right?
Yeah, I mean, unless it's,
unless you're really into bombs, you're like, actually, this is kind of nice.
So Leslie Groves is a general who is actually the head of the Manhattan Project because it's a military thing. But he recruits Oppenheimer to lead the laboratory. And Los Alamos in New Mexico happens to be a place that Oppenheimer visited a lot when he was younger.
Right.
Because he was like a sickly kid and his father was like, oh, go out to New Mexico. That'll be good.
Yeah.
And
he liked horseback riding, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
for those of you at home.
So Manhattan Project, the big irony, I guess, is that by the time they actually build the bomb, the Germans have surrendered. And so the whole point of building the bomb was to get it before the Germans.
Right.
But then when they actually drop the two bombs in August of 45, it's on Japan.
Right, right. But when he recruited Oppenheimer, apparently there was controversy over whether he was too far like left-leaning or something like that. And then also, he didn't have a Nobel Prize, so they were wondering if he could lead all these people, like all these great scientists. And the guy, Groves, was basically like, this guy's great. Like, he's crazy, ambitious. So he's just going to get it done. That's why he nominated him as the head guy, right?
Totally. And I feel like that's one of those things. Yeah, that's why he was... not a Nobel Prize winner. I don't know. Would you, if you're a Nobel Prize winner or bound to be a Nobel Prize winner, and some non-Nobel Prize winner is bossing you around?
I'd be pissed.
I'd be really,
especially
pissed.
This guy's nuts.
Yeah, he's gonna fuck my wife after too.
He then he pour acid on some apple trying to kill someone.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
What was that thing?
So
we missed half of his lady situation.
Oh, we'll get to it. So,
all right, cool.
Essentially, Oppenheimer, when he was at, I think it was at Cavendish, didn't like his tutor and like almost poisoned his
an
tutor.
Apple, yeah.
And then people like just moved on from it.
Yeah, he's nuts. This guy's out of control.
Yeah, that's the thing. So we'll talk about this a lot, but like he's become, and you know, the movie.
Is this just an intro?
Let's get started.
This a lot. I'm like, all my notes are done. We've covered everything.
No, okay. I mean, I think in like 45 minutes, I think we'll get to the fact that... So, Oppenheimer, I feel like he's often depicted as this big martyr because of what happens to him during the Red Scare. But I think it is important to note that there are like a lot of negative things about
him. Yeah. He's a nut job.
And the women's stuff is huge. So, I mean, to go back to that, Gene Tatlock and him... break up
right
soon after he marries his wife Kitty.
Right,
it's Kitty's fourth marriage,
right.
By the way, she was married, she's also a communist, everyone's
right. Everyone's a communist with this guy.
I hate to sound like J. Edgar Hoover, but everyone's a fucking communist.
He's a communist. We need to bring that back. He's a communist.
Just
calling people communists.
And like canceling them or just to...
Just, you know, see Bramante, be like, you're a fucking communist.
Vegan?
Vegan communist, yeah. Any little inkling where you're like, oh, he's a communist.
Yeah, but it's not any like organization or anything like that.
Yeah.
You find it.
So this girl, her first marriage, Kitty, that's his like main...
That's his main
squeeze. Right?
Yeah.
For I mean, there's others, but... So the first marriage ends within 3 months or whatever, right? Her first marriage doesn't last long. Second marriage, the guy dies in the Spanish Civil War.
Right.
Right. Third marriage, he's like a physicist, some scientist, right?
I think a doctor.
Doctor, yeah. And she cheats on him.
With Oppenheimer.
With Oppenheimer. They go to like New Mexico for the summer, and she hangs out with him as she's married, and then he knocks her up.
He knocks her up, which is finally the impetus for her leaving the third husband.
Yeah.
And then,
Didn't he say no? She was like, hey, I'm cheating on you. I want to get a divorce. And he said no, so they had to go to Nevada, like Reno, Nevada.
Yeah.
To get like there's some sort of like instant divorce where it's like, all right. There's nothing he can do about it.
We're
in Reno, Nevada.
Instant coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then Oppenheimer cheats on Kitty with Gene Tatlock again.
Exactly, yeah.
Gene Tatlock ends up killing herself, actually. She was like a very depressed person. And then he also cheats on Kitty with a woman that's 10 years older.
Well, Tomlin, who he's somewhere in here. I don't know where Tomlin comes into. Tomlin is the guy that he wrote the papers on black holes.
Right.
After the Trinity test, he cheats on Kitty with Tomlin's wife.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
He's literally just going around and fucking a bunch of married women. Like, that's his thing. That's his fetish. He's like, I like women.
I like bombs.
Like, there was... In the Wikipedia page, there's no reference to someone that's, like, not already married. Except maybe one.
Maybe Tatlock. Yeah,
Tatlock is the only... Yeah, that only lasted for a few months. He's like, this isn't fun enough. There's no excitement.
There's something missing here.
Excitement.
Yeah. Trinity. Wait, Trinity 3, right? And he loves love triangles. Maybe there's something
right.
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's a communist. Allegedly, we'll see. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned
for next episode.
Don't tease it for, we're not getting to that for another 2 hours.
Right, 3 hours.
So the government drops the bomb on Hiroshima. Then a few days later.
But can we go back to something else?
Are you going back to the women?
No, I'm going back to the Trinity test.
Yeah.
Or the Manhattan Project. Apparently, when he got recruited by Groves, they wanted to have Oppenheimer and all of his scientists like be part of the military, right? So they put him through tests, and they failed all of them.
I think Oppenheimer himself also really wanted it. Like
right.
he wanted to wear a uniform.
Yeah, he dressed up in
thing.
Like a colonel uniform or something like that.
Exactly.
Or a lieutenant uniform, and he failed like the physical fitness test. He was like too skinny. He had bronchitis or something, right? Tuberculosis. So he failed a bunch of these tests. So what they had to do was they said, hey, the lab in Los Alamos is going to be operated under University of California. And then University of California will be contracted by the government.
So he doesn't... I think every once in a while he would just like dress up in a colonel's uniform
See,
or something.
This guy's nuts.
He really liked that. Also, there are like... He had like a very distinct look with the hat, and he's a chain smoker.
Yeah, smoking cigs the whole time.
And apparently, this is kind of cool. Apparently, all of his students kind of started to adapt his, you know,
they started
fashion.
Fucking everyone's wives.
Dude, Berkeley, people talk about Berkeley in the 60s. Berkeley in the 30s, just everyone's
yeah,
fucking
each other. He was ahead of his time.
So, where do you stand on dropping the bomb?
On what do you mean? Like whether it was good or bad?
Yeah.
Well, apparently, I think I actually did a paper on this in college or high school or something like that. But so the Trinity test gets done on July 16, 1945. That's when the first atomic bomb is ever set off. And then on August 6th, Hiroshima happens. So that's what, like a few weeks later?
Right. And they talk in the book that I read. So I read this book, American Prometheus, which I think inspired what's going to be the Nolan movie.
Uh-huh.
And the gist that I got was that, like, when they built the bomb, Truman's government, it was kind of a foregone conclusion that they were going to use it. And there was a bit of an aspect of, well, we built it.
Yeah.
You know, like, what are we going to...
Yeah. What are we just going to show the video? We're just going to send the video out? No, we have to kill people.
And I really mean it. Like, that seems like part of what happens.
Right.
Well, yeah, but I'm sorry, but you were saying... Yeah.
Well, Hiroshima happened on August 6th. I don't know what happened in between, but on August 9th, so 3 days later, they dropped it on Nagasaki. And that pissed Oppenheimer off because he said it's not needed. All we had to do was Hiroshima.
The other thing is that the Soviets attack Manchuria, I think, the same day as Nagasaki.
Uh-huh.
And some people actually say that that's really why the Japanese finally surrendered, not even because of the atomic bomb, because
really?
They're like, oh, the Soviet Union are going after us now. We're totally, like, this is completely
yeah, yeah.
helpless. Yeah, I think that those are the two questions. Drop the bomb at all and all the ethics involved with that.
Right.
But then the second bomb, like, only gave him a few days
right.
to like reflect.
You want another one? Well, the issue, apparently, from what I recall from my high school paper
yeah.
when I was talking about atomic bombs.
that was apparently what everyone else was talking
yeah,
about. Like.
Everyone's like Claude Monet. But Japan, like the Japanese, it's an island, right? So it's very hard to infiltrate. And apparently the Japanese, those that like, they just like wouldn't surrender.
Right.
They're like, you're going to have to come over and literally just dominate us for us to surrender. You're going to have to kill all of
us. Which was, the plan was to have a huge, like bigger than D-Day sending of troops in November of that year.
Right.
So the idea for Truman is like, can we avoid doing that by right. dropping these atomic weapons?
And the question is, do you avoid, I mean, this gets into ethics and stuff. Are there more casualties by dropping a bomb or by, and also you have to think about your own people, right? Even if there might be more Japanese casualties, you know, your people count as like three. when you do the arithmetic, it's American lives times three. Minus
I like
Japanese
the idea,
lives.
I like the idea of all these theoretical physicists doing like insane equations.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
meanwhile, at the White House in the Oval Office, it's just Truman being like 2 million times
yeah.
three.
It's like, all right, we're going to drop the bombs.
Oppenheimer meets with Truman after they drop the bombs, and he says, I have blood on my hands. I feel like I have blood on my hands. And apparently Truman is like,
fuck. It's like, get this guy out of here.
Yeah, get this. Yeah. You've got blood on your hands.
Yeah.
How do you think I feel? In the book, it says that Truman wanted to, like, in his mind, he was like, I wanted to give him a handkerchief and be like, here, wipe the blood off your fucking hands.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough question, but I mean, you go into deterrence theory and all that. Imagine if they didn't drop any bombs. It seems kind of inevitable that a bomb would be used.
Right.
Right? Because no one knows the gravity of the atomic bomb until it's actually used on the people. And then you see, like, the radiation and stuff like that. But you wonder if, like, the deterrent, like, you know, deterrence theory, it's basically like, are nuclear weapons more beneficial to have in the world or less beneficial? Because they're saying if you have them in the world, people are less likely to do mass-scale wars. What ends up happening is there's a lot of little wars, but you don't fuck with someone that has a nuke because then you get dominated, right?
Right, and I guess your point is that by dropping a bomb that's not a test bomb,
right,
like Trinity, then you're showing to the world the possible destruction.
Right. I mean, Trinity, like, if you think about it, yes, we demonstrated that there was an atomic bomb at Trinity, but you don't know, like, you don't know how big it is. It's just hearsay or a video.
Sure.
And when you watch the video, you have to, like,
see,
you would have to have a scale.
Cloud.
Yeah, you have to have it, like, all right, this is a man standing next to the blast radius, and this is how big it is, you know?
It's interesting when they describe Oppenheimer's reaction. He was just, like, really nervous it wouldn't work.
Right.
So there are kind of, the bombs that were dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, from a just scientific point of view, were not identical. The Hiroshima one was uranium, unstable uranium,
right,
235, and then the Nagasaki one was plutonium, and they didn't know whether or not the plutonium one would work. So that's why they even bothered to do Trinity. That's the plutonium one. So he's like, is this going to fuck? Like, he didn't know. And then when it clearly does work, and they feel this, not only the explosion, but apparently, like, massive heat,
yeah,
even when they're miles and miles away, he is like, you know, everyone's like cheering him on, and he's like, and that's when he says the famous Bhagavad Gita quote,
right,
which is kind of a downer.
Apparently he said like two.
Oh, yeah. He just keeps quoting
What's
the Bhagavad
Gita.
Which is
not he just keeps running around. He's like, destroyer of worlds.
Not even that big of
actually,
a book.
Actually, no, let me do another Bhagavad Gita reference.
He's not even reading the book. He's
just
on Bartlett's quotes, and he's just stuck on that page.
But yeah, it's what it was. I am death, destroyer of worlds.
I have become death, destroyer of worlds. Yeah, it's intense.
I thought I read the Bhagavad Gita. I don't recall.
The thing with the Bhagavad Gita is that I think that people take that quote by Oppenheimer to mean that he's, like, very regretful. But in context, what's happening in that Hindu story is that the god Vishnu is telling Arjuna, this soldier, basically, like, it's your destiny to fight.
Right.
Because death is not really, who cares?
Right.
It's not, in the grand scheme of things, it's not really a thing. So the way I took that quote was actually much more like, this is, you know, what I got to do.
Right.
Kind of
thing. This is my job.
Yeah.
It's stoicism.
My dharma.
Yes. Was that Arjuna thing in the book? Or did you read the Bhagavad Gita and you recalled that?
I actually didn't just read the Bhagavad Gita. I read the entire Mahabharata.
No, is that a bigger? What is that?
So the Bhagavad Gita is like a small part of a,
it's like
bigger
a chapter.
Epic.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
I did not
I
read
that. Check
that. No,
out.
I was joking. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I read the Bhagavad Gita. It's a good book.
Five stars. All right. So we win the war.
Right. Thank God.
It's always weird to me that we say, I don't know if I, is this a bit? I don't think it's a bit, but.
The war?
Yeah.
World War II bits?
Every time we talk about, like, America, but even when it's, like, old, before we were born, we always say, like, we. It's like, I didn't drop the bomb. You know what I mean?
Right. And also other people, I guess we're part of the United States, and we were part of the side that won.
Right.
So we won the war.
Yeah,
we
but
didn't
the
lose. We. Did we lose?
No, I didn't fucking.
We didn't lose.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's the fact
we won
that
the war.
Yeah, it's like we didn't do that. Yeah, right.
People that were located in my country before me won the war.
Right. Okay.
That's
anyway.
A lot longer than we won the war.
Yeah.
It's like a short end.
So America wins the war.
Right.
Oppenheimer continues to have big positions within the government.
By the way, just a side note, it's kind of, Russia was on our side.
Yeah, so this is the crazy thing.
I forgot that until I started reading it. I was like, we're against Russia.
So
through World War II, and I'm like, they were with us.
And that's why it becomes so maybe the biggest.
Here we go.
Now the
all just an introduction.
So basically, the Soviets sign a pact with Hitler originally, but then Hitler attacks Russia.
Uh-huh.
Soviets are now against Russia. When we join the war, we're with the Soviets.
Right.
But we don't trust them. Right. We're not allies with them the same way that we're allies with the British.
Mm-hmm.
So the big question, you can't, if you're Oppenheimer or anyone in the Manhattan Project, you're not supposed to show your hand to the Soviets. The Soviets don't know, or they're not supposed to know, that we're building the atomic bomb.
Even though they're on our side, we don't know. It's an enemy of an enemy is our friend type thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Churchill himself said, I'll make a pact with the devil to stop Hitler, the devil being Stalin.
Yes.
So in 1943, there's something called the Chevalier Incident,
mm-hmm.
where this guy...
What are we going to call this incident? It's called the Chevalier Incident.
Hakon Chevalier, an English professor, is really good friends with Oppenheimer. Uh-huh. This guy Chevalier is a communist. He approaches Oppenheimer and says that there's this guy, George Eltington, who can give information to the Soviets, if Oppenheimer is willing, give information about the Manhattan Project or about the bomb to the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
Oppenheimer says, no way, that's traitorous, I'm not going to do it. He sits on this for a little while. And then, about a half year later, reports it. But when he reports it to the higher-ups, he says that it was actually three people that Eltington was trying to tell. Basically, he's trying to cover up for Chevalier and for himself, essentially.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't know that when he's telling people about this, that it's bugged. It's recorded. So,
here we go.
In 1954 is the biggest event probably of Oppenheimer's life after the war, which is that they revoke his security clearance. There is a hearing to see whether or not he should have his security clearance restored and then renewed.
Mm-hmm.
The main sort of, and I assume in the movie, the main kind of quote-unquote bad guys in this would be Louis Strauss, who is kind of this like big businessman, but was also the head of the Atomic Energy Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a beef, just like personal beef, with Oppenheimer. He doesn't like him because I think one time Oppenheimer
tried to cheat on his wife.
No, he didn't even try to fuck his wife. One time Oppenheimer like slighted him in front of Congress or something like that. So he doesn't like him just kind of for personal reasons. But one of the big things during this hearing is that they show that Oppenheimer basically fudged this story. They're testing Oppenheimer's loyalty to the country and whether he should have a security clearance, which is a big deal.
So they asked about the Chevalier incident,
and
that they had proof of that happened, and he lied about it.
He lied about the details of it. He did report it, and he did probably say, he's not a spy. Like, he did probably not give any information or anything, but he was lying about it, and he didn't know. During this hearing, it wasn't a real court case, so they didn't have to follow actual law.
Right.
And so they shocked him and his team and the people defending him with all of these, the fact that the conversation was bugged.
Right.
And at one point, Oppenheimer says, just like, they're like, why'd you do this? And he just says, like, because I'm an idiot. In the middle of this hearing, he's just like, because it was idiotic.
The fact that he lied about it,
yeah,
or the fact that he did it?
The fact that he lied about it.
Yeah. The security clearance, what is the security? Basically, like, he doesn't have access to...
like, top secret
top
information?
Secret. Yeah, whatever. Wasn't he kind of past that at this point?
I kind of agree, because they make this thing, when they talk about him, like, you know, McCarthyism, and that he's a symbol of it, and they're going after people, and they're so paranoid with all this stuff, and that all is true, but he didn't go to jail or anything. He just lost his security clearance.
Yeah, wasn't he, after the Trinity test, wasn't he, like, upset about nuclear war? So all of his kind of life was about, like, he did some, like, other research and stuff like that, but it was all about, like, nuclear deterrence and trying to, like... the world safe again.
And he wants openness, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
Which is a big thing where he's just like, the only way that we could keep the world safe after we've dropped these bombs is if we're open with other countries. There's some sort of, not just the United Nations, but some sort of international order that controls this kind of stuff.
Right.
And a lot of people, especially when the Cold War starts to heat up, are like, that's, you know, you can't be saying stuff like that.
Right.
And Edward Teller, who I guess he's another physicist, his big thing is that he wants to create the hydrogen bomb, which is like way more powerful because he uses fusion instead of fission, putting nuclei together. And he also kind of suggests in the hearing that Oppenheimer shouldn't have a security clearance.
Right.
And Oppenheimer, as part of what you're saying, is like, we shouldn't build the hydrogen bomb, or at least not like have a team build the hydrogen bomb as if it's an emergency.
Yeah. Security clearance. What is that even like? There's like an archive and he could just walk in whenever.
I don't know.
Even if he's not working on something, he's like, I got security clearance. Can I just pop in and hang out while you guys are security clearance?
Yeah, I got a security clearance. Yeah, Can I fuck your wife?
Man, I know she's in there.
And apparently he, after this whole hearing happens, is never really the same again. He's kind of, I mean, again, he's like suffered from depression his whole life.
Yeah.
He has two kids. The son, Peter, was born. That was when he knocked Kitty up.
Right.
And then he has a second,
like a daughter
yeah. who actually kills herself later on. But that was after Oppenheimer died.
Yeah. He doesn't know. It's kind of like the Nobel Prize. Nice. You don't know, so.
He's kind of rehabilitated a little bit before he dies. Kennedy gives him the Fermi Prize, like this big award, but he's scheduled to get the award in December 1963.
Okay.
So Kennedy gets killed like a week before, like
two weeks
before, so Johnson gives him it instead. But Kennedy is the one who wanted to give him
right,
the award.
Right, right. Is it when, like, he goes 19... When was this security clearance thing?
Because 54.
54. That's when, I guess that's when he went, what I read is in his later years, he would go to the Virgin Islands. He had like 2 acres in the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, it's
and he would
hard
like
to
sail
feel
around.
So bad for this guy.
Yeah, it's all chill. Who cares about the security clearance? Everyone's talking about the security. Everyone I talk to about Oppenheimer always brings up the security clearance.
Every conversation that you're at a cocktail party, when you're just at your own little communist gatherings.
At Thanksgiving dinner.
They're talking about security clearance, and you're just screaming at your uncle, look how many wives he fucked.
Look at him with five ladies on the beaches of the Virgin Islands. But you think, the reason why I chose Oppenheimer is because there's a Nolan movie coming out. No, Christopher Nolan's my favorite, like one of my favorite directors.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
He's fantastic.
Yeah. What's your favorite Nolan movie?
I really liked, I like Interstellar.
Over Dark Knight?
I like Interstellar over Dark Knight, and I do really love Tenet.
I don't think I've ever seen Tenet.
You haven't seen Tenet?
Is that a recent one?
I think it might be his latest one, but it got smashed. People are like, it's too confusing. It's crazy. But every time you watch it, you notice new things. It's a movie that is about time travel, like going backwards and forwards.
Which is kind of a big theme of his.
So you go, like, if you watch it, it's crazy. I'm not even going to be able to describe
it. Because I was going to say, the other movie that I love by him is Memento.
Yeah.
And that one is all told backwards.
Yeah, and things start clicking. It's kind of similar. You'll see common things. But do you think, you said that you think that this Nolan movie, Oppenheimer, which is coming out, I don't know when, but it's...
Well, I was thinking about releasing this like right when it comes out. I think it's in late
July. That's why I chose, this is going to be a famous pod. Everyone's going to be like searching Oppenheimer pods.
You know, this is probably the only pod we're just screaming like, who cares about a security clearance?
No, I looked up Oppenheimer pods before this.
Yeah.
And I clicked on one. And it was this guy that the intro was that they were doing acid or shrooms and getting high and talking about Oppenheimer. So I turned it off immediately.
Right.
But you think that this security clearance thing is going to be a big part of the movie?
I think that the movie will be. I think the two major periods of his life that would be focused on would be the Manhattan Project. That's going to be the bulk of it because that's his big triumph. That's the rise. And then the tragedy is... You know, that he, the security clearance, and they went after him.
How many sex scenes in the movie?
Full nudity?
How many are they going to touch about how many girls
Well, that's not a
how
big...
many wives that he hooked up with.
Maybe it's like a montage.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a fun montage.
It's the ending credits. Yeah, <it's> Tomlin.
I don't know. I mean, Nolan doesn't do a lot of like sex scene type things. He's not that.
But he's got to have some bit of it.
Well,
showing
it's,
how many women.
Well, here's
he cheated.
The thing. The reason why I said at the beginning that the relationships actually are, you know, significant just in like the story of his life mm-hmm. is that at the security hearings, they're mentioning Tatlock and that she was his mistress for a little while.
Uh-huh.
So like they're
the communist.
Right, because she's communist. Yes. So that's why it's relevant, I guess. But it's one of these, I guess that's maybe the big deal that like they humiliate you in the process of these hearings. So right. It's not just the security clearance. It's also that everything is besmirched. But here's another thing that I don't like about him. The guy named names. Like some of his students, like throughout the late 40s, early 50s, including right. at the security clearance, at the hearings, he is like outing other people where he's like, yeah, that guy was a communist. You can ruin his career. That right. guy was a communist. It's not like he was, if he hadn't been.
Well, if you're under oath, though, don't you have to do that?
I don't know.
They weren't specifically asking. He was just like, here's a list.
Yeah, he was not like, he was not one of these. I'm not saying like.
He's crazy. He's not a good guy. He's not a good guy at all.
I'm not saying maybe if I were in the same situation, I'd name names too. Yeah. I have no idea. But my point is that if he hadn't been martyred in this way, he would probably be remembered more as a guy who named names as opposed to as this, you know, symbol of,
right, right.
you know, the paranoia and everything.
Right. He's crazy.
Tobin, thank you
was
so
much.
Was
that it? How'd I do?
You did fantastic. Yes. You kidding? That was unbelievable.
You can keep my notes.
I can't read those. Plug baby shower.
Tobin Miller Comedy on Instagram. I got a live comedy show every Tuesday, Baby Shower. It's in the Lower East Side if you're in New York. And then I have a podcast, if you want the exact opposite of this, where it's something that has no structure, no subjects.
It's actually Oppenheimer, but it's all from the Japanese perspective. Yeah. That's what the podcast is.
It's called Baby Shower Comedy, too. But yeah, thank you, everyone.
Dude, thank you so much for being on.
Rockin'.